Welcome to the Made Up Savannah podcast. I'm your host, Dee Daniels. Made Up Savannah is a creative production of Corcoran Austin Hill Realty, serving Savannah since 1978. And the Made Up Savannah podcast is brought to you by Savoy Society, colleagues and lovers, and the Savannah Cabaret. And before we get going on this episode, I'm so excited to tell you we are having a podcast pop-up. And we want you to join us at Colleagues and Lovers. It is Thursday, April 4th from 5 to 7 p.m. Colleagues and Lovers in Habersham Village. You can stop by, meet the Made of Savannah team. How cool is that? And at the same time, have a great cocktail at Colleagues and Lovers and do it all for a great cause. A portion of the proceeds all day at Colleagues and Lovers in Habersham Village on Thursday, April 4th, will be going to Loop It Up Savannah. Loop It Up Savannah is a youth arts and educational enrichment organization, fantastic organization that brings arts integrated learning to more than 10,000 young people in the Savannah area every single year. Now, their commitment to the young people in Savannah, so strong, and we believe in that. So we want to support them. Loop It Up Savannah, you can support them too by stopping by the pop-up at Colleagues and Lovers on Thursday, April 4th. We're going to be there from 5 to 7 p.m., and we would love to see you for a little happy hour, a little podcast pop-up, and all for a great cause. Welcome to the Made Up Savannah podcast. I'm Dee Daniels, and we are certainly well known here in Savannah to have plenty of badass women that make this place really, really great. And my next two guests and the team they represent are definitely at the top of that list. I'm very excited to welcome Katie Fitzhugh and Kelly Lowe from Repurpose Savannah. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Gosh.
In unison.
Yeah.
We work together. We planned that.
One, two, three, go. Yeah, we planned that. Katie is the director of deconstruction at Repurpose Savannah. Kelly is the director of salvage. I would like to deconstruct those titles, first of all, because they're very cool titles. Tell me exactly what you do at Repurpose.
So we are a deconstruction and salvage company. We're a 501c3 whose mission is to train women and kind of minorities in the construction industry to enter into deconstruction. Deconstruction is at the core of our company, a sustainable alternative to demolition. So another one of our pillars is to basically keep usable, great material out of the landfill. And then our third pillar is to align with preservation. So we live in Savannah. It's a beautifully preserved city that requires constant maintenance, and deconstruction aligns itself kind of beautifully with that mission and that ethos of this wonderful city, in that, you know, what we end up deconstructing because a building has a lifespan, right? Most things do, is then used to support the buildings that remain. Mm-hmm. So it's like an organ donor in a sense.
Right.
So Katie is in charge of taking those buildings apart beautifully.
Meticulously.
Yeah. So that's the decon, short for deconstruction.
Right. And then Kel saves my life and processes the materials and then works your ass off to find new homes and new, you know, beings for that material.
Because it's not always linear, right?
No,
like a 2x4 that Katie takes out of a building doesn't always end up being used as a 2x4. Right. So it's a field that requires like some imagination, a lot of love. Like we're super nerds and geeks for old trees. And like, I think that trash is stupid.
Right. Yeah.
And we think that women should, you know, women and anybody who wants to be doing this work, but feels like they can't get a shoe in the door should allowed the space to do that.
Yeah.
I feel like too, that like, people from all over the country are watching what you guys do, because it's so much bigger than what I think anything, unless you like see it or meet one of you guys up close. It's like a, you know, like you're an animal in nature. I saw them up close.
Right.
And, you know, unless you actually sit down and have a conversation about it, you don't know the scope.
Yeah.
And I feel like people watch what we do here in Savannah. They watch what we do with the historic buildings. They watch what we do with housing, how we're taking apart these buildings and houses that have been here for so long. And you're talking about materials that aren't being reproduced anymore, aren't being made anymore.
No, you can't find them.
Right.
They don't exist.
And you guys are finding these things. And how do you, you're talking about the meticulous process, Katie. It is quite a process and it's very careful.
I mean, it is. Sometimes I think I take that for granted because it just comes so naturally to, you know, our crew, and everyone works really hard to get really good. I honestly tell most people that my crew anymore could deconstruct an entire house with just one 42-inch DeWalt crowbar. And I stand by it. They are badass women, like you said earlier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot about like intention too. You know, Katie sets out to deconstruct these buildings and save as much as possible. And when like that's the intent going forward,
it makes it easy to be your goal.
It's easy to do.
Right.
Like decon is not, it's complicated when it's a 1970s building or a younger building that's basically been glued together and you've used like pneumatic tools all over the place. But old buildings were designed, Katie like knows this better than anyone, to come apart.
Right. So, well, I mean, the most economic structure is one that's already built.
Right.
Maintenance is the key to keeping those structures in the built environment so that we can still interact with them. I always say buildings are very organic creatures. They change in style, they change in type, just like the fashion, you know, fast fashion. We have fast architecture. We all know that. I mean, I think lately we've been talking about like the flipper gray, how everything is now gray.
Right.
And it's like, God, bring back historic hardwoods, something like that. But just like Kelly was saying, I mean, historic structures were made to be maintenance. Historic windows, there's a little pocket that you can unscrew and hook the weight back on and continue using it for another 100 years.
It's like we were a lot smarter when we had a lot less.
Right.
But anyways, I'm not anti-technology. No,
right.
I mean, we use technology all the time to better deconstruct, but also one of our mission, or one of the parts of our three-leaf clover mission, as Kelly mentioned, to preserve, well, to be in line with historic preservation efforts. And with that comes documentation and research of every historic structure that we work on, or in general, every structure, give or take anymore. I probably don't do like expansive house histories on a garage, but we 3D scan everything. So like without that technology, it doesn't exist. LIDAR is a fantastic source or resource for documenting the built environment. And granted, deconstruction essentially is structural removal. I mean, it is. That's what we do, is full structural removal and partials through the 3D scanning process and the site photos and the site elevations and everything like that. We are preserving the ability to interact with that structure even after it's reached the end of its lifespan and gone on to like a slew of others, like, you know, in different forms through material reuse.
So I've heard the words deconstruction, and I've also heard the word and seen the words in your materials about demolition.
Mm-hmm.
Demolition to most people is we're just taking this down.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the norm. And that norm comes from post-World War II, when all of these land moving machines like bobcats and excavators and tanks and things like that were so readily available for wartime needs, for, you know, decimating your enemy, things like that, moving vast amount of troops through, you know, like I think of World War II, like when they were moving into France and they had to move all of that land. That's really where demolition became the new norm. And ever since then, it's been through other people nationally and internationally really striving to bring deconstruction back to the forefront. I mean, people were doing, we've been reusing building materials for thousands of years. Like, this is not a new phenomenon.
It became a lot cheaper just to go in with an excavator, crush a building, right? So demolish.
Yeah.
Total loss, than to pick it apart.
Right.
And salvage things. And then, you know, the materials that we were also starting to make buildings from just were of less value as well. So Mm-hmm. Like, if I can crush it and get rid of it, like, you know, there's no harm because I can just, you know, go over there and buy the same sticks of super young pine and shitty OSB and like all's well.
Right.
And, right. But I mean, historic houses, I mean, if you go back old enough, they're all unique. There wasn't a historical Home Depot where every single stick was the exact same, you know, all curved. So, I mean, historical structures, they're all incredibly unique, like I said. And nowadays, everything is very streamlined. You know what you're going to get. But I think going back to that point, Kel, that it is cheaper to demolish. I mean, it is. We still say, like, deconstruction takes six times as long and six times more expensive because we have to pay six people versus Joe Schmo from Gwinnett County with, like, a backhoe.
I am looking forward to the day where I get to deconstruct a building that was built in 2024 and it like works and it makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not an architect, I'm not a builder, so I can't speak from their side of things, but I think, you know, the root of a lot of the issues that we come across with trying to deal with contemporary buildings is that they're not designed to be unbuilt. The materials are not designed to be reused. The older ones, yeah, sure, great. And that's why we're doing what we're doing, because, you know, there's a market for it. It makes sense. The historic lumber that we're salvaging, as you mentioned, like, those trees don't grow anymore. So it's a limited commodity, highly prized, highly valued, because, I mean, for many reasons, aesthetic and structural. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to the day where cheap and crappy isn't the way we build like the things that we put on this planet.
Right.
But so far I'm not, you know,
you're not there yet.
We're not there yet.
Yeah. But so the Build Reuse Conference, that is an international organization, nonprofit for building and reusing, right? Was just held in Savannah, and we were a part of the host. We as Repurpose Savannah hosted, but there were quite a few of the different segments and conversations that were building. Building to be deconstructed, or like,
Design build.
Yeah. Yeah. Shifting. So
building with that in mind.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So that almost it's like just going back to what we used to know.
Right.
Is building structures to be maintenanced easily or to be fully deconstructed but salvaged as they came down. Right. Because I think, just like I said, buildings are very organic. They have a lifespan. And, you know, the only reason we have lives as like humans is because we're taking care of our body. We're maintaining our bodies and our mind. And so when you don't do that, you see people fall into neglect and, you know, deteriorate. Same as a building. So without the maintenance and at least the thought process that you want it to last a long time, you want to interact, you want it to have like a life, you have to build with that in mind.
Right.
And right now we don't, just like Kelly said. And so,
I mean, we don't. It's not like some people do.
Oh, it's a blanket.
The majority.
And I would think a lot of people that are doing that are probably consulting with you guys I mean, you know, to be able to have someone knowledgeable in, okay, we're going to build this and we want to be intentional about it. We want it to be better. We want it to be able to continue after this one use, you know? So I would imagine people come to you guys a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
To discuss that.
They're out there, which, you know, luckily for us, yeah, I'd love to just see that on a greater scale. It's not the norm.
This season, we're so proud to partner up with a trendsetter and a trend breaker in Savannah's historic district, the incomparable bar and restaurant that hits all the marks and sits right at 102 East Liberty Street. I'm talking about Savoy Society. You know, we fell in love with this downtown hotspot well before we even moved here, and it's captured our hearts even more as locals. Now, it's my favorite spot to grab a lemon drop martini. Mm-hmm. Hands down, best place to get a lemon drop martini. And I even like to try something new on occasion, like a sourdough flatbread, a slider, maybe even a new cocktail if I'm living dangerously. But don't even get me started on Me Gusta Mondays and the hot honey margarita, because once I tried that, Savoy Society, seriously, you had me at vinyl and wicker. The long bar, the cozy sofas, oh, and the pickled deviled eggs, and the mini hot dogs with the tots. It's a whole vibe. If you Google it, you'll see the popular opinion is the bartenders are just lovely. That's an understatement. They're really genuinely amazing. Stop by Savoy and tell them you heard about them on the Made of Savannah podcast. Savoy Society Sav, S-A-V, if you're looking for them on Instagram. Also, SavoySociety.com. Check out the full menu.
What I find interesting is that when you are building from salvaged or reclaimed material, it kind of goes back to this like design or the creative process, right? You have to allow for surprises to happen because you're not just shopping in like a linear way for right. the things that your house is going to be made of. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you end up designing a building that is like really charming and kind of behaves a different way than just like a normal building would, was because you had to interact with it in such a like unique and kind of intimate way, and allow for moments of like design that you wouldn't have thought of necessarily, except for like, oh, I have access to this awesome window and I need to use it. Let's like change this facade. And then all of a sudden that facade becomes like a totally magical space.
Right.
Right.
That goes back to your intention.
You know, yeah.
Building with intention.
I think the general community here are surprised by a couple of things when they get to be introduced to Repurpose Savannah. Number one, I think not a ton of people know that it's a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. You know, that piece is very interesting. And to know that, you know, how can the community support that nonprofit, I think is very important. The other piece that I'd love for you guys to talk about is I think people are floored when they actually go to the yard and they actually see how big the space is that you have, what's available there, mm-hmm. and how just everyday person can walk in and purchase material yeah. and get a story from where it was from and things like that. I got to go and see the yard once and I was blown away. I'm just absolutely blown away.
Yeah. The lumberyard is a really special place, and anyone listening to this should absolutely come visit us. But so we are a 501c3, and the reason being that, like, you know, Katie is competing with demolition companies to get these deconstruction contracts. Mm-hmm. We're like, it's an emerging market. Same for me yep. selling, you know, secondhand, I'm doing that in parentheses, building materials. So people can support us in a few different ways.
Donations are really cool.
You can donate usable material.
Also fundraising. I mean, just donations like that too.
Yep. We financial donations.
Give you tax deductible receipts.
We recently had kind of a campaign to improve our electrical lighting. And our lighting in our warehouse.
Yeah.
I think. Which is going to enable us to process material mm-hmm. in a new way. I won't get into the nitty gritty.
Well, and then we have like tool acquisitions. There are tools that like every once in a while we will do like a big campaign towards trying to ascertain so that we can yeah. better facilitate the use of reclaimed materials.
But yeah, weekly we have people that come and volunteer with us too. Mm-hmm. And that's really special because you get to meet people. People get to handle the material. Mm-hmm. They get to participate in what enables these materials to be used again, right? You need to pull metal out of wood. Yeah. You need to trim things.
Well, I mean, that's just a whole new avenue that, you know, the everyday human doesn't get to interact with the building yeah. materials that are going into their home. So sometimes we get people who are working on their projects, their, you know, renovations or something yeah. like that. And they want to have more of a physical interaction with the materials and understand like where they're coming from and how they're processed, just like Kelly was saying. So they do come out to the lumberyard and they help denail and trim or cull materials. And I just think sometimes when you go to Home Depot, right, which I mean, we all do, even I do.
Yep.
Just the human interaction of what the materials, all of the effort that came to fruition to create that one material is lost in translation. Totally. Versus Repurpose, it's really fantastic. Like you can follow our entire projects from like the day we activate on a job site to, you know, photos of it going to the lumberyard to photos or volunteer opportunities to come and denail that material, learn how to denail, like what a random skill that you would think is very obvious.
But we do have people that come in who are like maybe in their 60s or 70s mm-hmm. now, and they're like, you know, my dad used to give me a penny for every nail yeah. that I pulled out.
And I'm like, wow, we'd like, be cool. Love it.
I won't give you a penny, but you can keep all your nails. And like,
but sometimes they love it. And I think it's fun because there is kind of like a, I don't want to say like secret cloud around repurpose, but sometimes it seems so not touchable.
Yeah.
Or like, you know what I mean?
I felt that way when, so I've been working at Repurpose for a bit over two years. Mm-hmm. And I like knew of Repurpose, but I was like, you know, they're cool. They don't need me.
Right.
They don't need my help.
Yeah. And then I was like,
they got to go
hire
home.
Her right now.
Yeah.
It's like interviewing Kelly. I was like,
but I think, yeah, Kay, that's a super good point. Like, even if you don't have woodworking experience, even if you don't like have a project that needs building materials, like come hang out. And the lumberyard is located mm-hmm. At the very end of East Gwinnett. Yeah. It's super beautiful. We've got a little trail. There's a rookery.
Right. It dead ends into the marsh. So I think in total.
Crazy beautiful.
In total, it's 100 acres.
It's huge.
That sounds wild.
Yeah.
The vast majority of that is reclaimed marshland. And so I think we have like maybe like
we should just
2 acres that we use. We should throw more parties.
Well, you're getting ready to throw a big party.
A yeah. rager, D.
That's about to happen on April the 6th, Moonlight on the Marsh. Mm-hmm. And so this is actually going to be there on your yes. location, on your mm-hmm. property. And this is a huge opportunity for fundraising. This is if the community is like, hey, I'd love a mm-hmm. mark on my calendar where I can do something. This would be the time
right.
to yeah. do
yeah, this
it.
This is definitely one of our... Well, I think it is arguably our largest fundraiser of the year. I mean, it's our big party that we throw and it's incredibly lovely. I can't even tell you. It's fun to have like everyone who supports us and past clients, people that we're planning to work with or things like that. They all come out in droves and right. it's lovely to see your entire support network once a year. You know, yeah. I mean, we see each other throughout, you know, the year all through Savannah. It's a small, big town, you know. You can't go anywhere without seeing someone you know.
Right.
And especially at Repurpose, when you all wear overalls, everyone yeah. knows you in the public. They're like, you're dirty and gross in public. Right. You work at Repurpose.
Repurpose.
But yeah, no, it's a really nice time. We're all like sentimental folk. I think May cries every year.
She does. Bit. But also probably
but she might not cry this year.
We make her do it.
But, you know, it's hard work. It's what we do. And like that is a day to be like... To
it's
thank,
nice.
Thankful to everybody, thankful for our clients, thankful well, like, for anyone who donates because, I mean, we can't do it alone.
Right. No.
Katie probably could deconstruct a house by herself, but then she'd have like a big pile of stuff.
Kelly right. would have to come move it
yeah,
and denail like it.
You need every piece of the team is what you're
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, none exactly. of this works if we also don't have the people that live mm-hmm. in this city.
Right.
wanting to do this with us.
Well, and advocating for deconstruction yeah. over, you know, traditional demolition. It truly is like, we cannot do this alone. Also, I don't want to do it alone.
Right.
My body gets tired and I'm almost 30 in 2 months. So yeah. I'm like, I think after that, I get a wheelchair, right?
But what's cool is that, you know, Katie and May especially have been doing this. They're training a lot of people to do mm-hmm. decon. So they have, you know, we have a whole like consulting arm of the company whose mission is to go out and kind of cross train mm-hmm. contractors, cross train.
We have all sorts demolition. Of people. Yeah. Sometimes so, professors.
So that your aging body can rest.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
So the more people, the better, which yeah. is good, which is good. I think that's the other thing. I think a lot of people might be surprised about. Am I still correct that it's an all-female led team?
It's an all-female
yeah,
plus.
Women plus. Led
women group. Plus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like
right.
Kelly mentioned, yeah, just women, but also just anyone who falls in minority,
yeah.
is especially in the construction and demolition industry. I think of the entire industry, less than 10% is made up of women. Of that 10%, it's estimated roughly maybe 2% yeah, or 3% represent women who work in the field. So, I mean, it's a very small margin, and we're just trying to ever grow it, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, that's got to mean a lot to you guys to be able to provide that, because there are, I mean, I can just think of handfuls of people in my life over the years that I know would want to be a part of something like this and maybe felt like they couldn't, mm-hmm. or that they weren't welcome because they were female or because yeah. they were in a minority group that maybe did not identify in a certain box or as a certain gender, and really felt like I can't be a part of that kind of crew or team, or mm-hmm. I can't learn that kind of skill, and probably missed out on doing something like that. And it's got to mean a lot for you guys to be able to provide that and have such a welcome mat for that.
It does. I think, you know, doing podcasts and things like this and being interviewed on the news, a lot of times people ask us what our favorite part of the job is. And I mean, I like the physical aspect of it. I just like not having to pay to go to the gym. But my favorite part as a leader and as, you know, the director of deconstruction who does the vast majority of the training, my favorite part of the job is watching my crew gain confidence and grow. Mm-hmm. Because they don't come to work and grow in only tool competencies. One specific human comes to mind, and she is fantastic, just incredibly brilliant. But I cannot tell you how we have all watched her confidence just soar in this job. I mean, making huge life-changing choices that she never thought she could do. But everybody on my crew is immaculate, and I wouldn't trade them for the world. But it's incredible to watch their confidence just exude out of their body when before they might have been really shy and kind of stood off to the side. And now they're like about to get banned from using walkie-talkies because they won't stop using the walkie-talkies. And so, I mean, that's my favorite. And honestly, like, Kelly just became a mom.
Yep.
And so just showing people that, like, you can be a mom and take parental leave and come back full force or part-time, yeah. like, if needed, you know. I think we try to, the amount of inclusivity that we put towards just working together in our everyday job, I think that goes a long way. And I think a lot of that is because when you deconstruct a building, that's a lot of trust in who's around you, right? Mm. Because you are just unbuilding a structure. So like I'll say be eyes. And so someone is going to stand behind and they're going to watch for anything that shifts because in theory, deconstruction, you know, as you take it down, the building's going to move when you want it to move, right? And it's not just going to fall.
Right.
However, life is weird. Things, yeah. I'm not going to say things fall on my job site because I don't. But, you know, someone is being eyes. Someone is always watching out for the betterment of the group and just there to support. So I think that's one there's no macho. I can lift things more than Kelly can right now. But,
girl,
just kidding. But,
that's funny. We have a test for both of you to lift couch with me on it. See who can.
No. Maybe not after we moved this massive table down three flights of stairs. Yeah.
No, it's the crew is the best part, and the volunteers are the best part.
It is fun to interact with the volunteers.
It's a lot of feel good stuff.
It is. I mean, lucky. Yeah. If I don't deconstruct in a day, I don't go home feeling like I didn't do anything. Mm. You know. If then I just feel like I really got to communicate with my crew and work with volunteers and do a community outreach and things like that. So I would say there are some down days, but more often than not, I never go home feeling like I didn't do my job.
Right.
Oh, I thought about other ways that people could support us.
Oh, yes. Let's hear it.
So if you do have a building that you are thinking needs to be gone and need to demolish it, think about deconstructing it. Like, call us, have a conversation with Katie, and then to think about using reclaimed building materials. Mm-hmm. before you go to Home Depot. Stop at our lumber yard. See if we have what you need. I bet we do.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And it's not just limited to like people who build. I mean, interior designers are incredibly crucial to the inclusion of reclaimed materials. I mean,
a lot of what we do is kind of like the interior finishing.
Right. Well, and that's because even in 2024 right now, you're not allowed to use reclaimed materials and structure. So you can't use a historic 2x4 in a new build or something.
Unless they're graded by a structural engineer.
Correct.
Which I'm on. Ah, this is in development.
Nice.
Yeah. We've been searching for that for quite some time.
We found some as a part of this like build reuse conference, which was like so cool. And I I'd also encourage anyone who's interested in like architecture and sustainability and all this cool stuff to like check that out.
Yeah, it was wild having everybody, like having all the big brains in Savannah. I mean,
people are doing some really cool things around the U.S.
Like recycling carpet.
And to see them be like really also into and impressed with what we were doing was great. I think, you know, sometimes in Savannah, you can like feel like you're in this
fishbowl.
Awesome bubble.
Yeah.
But then people are like, you know, from Colorado, this guy that like deconstructed a hospital.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Was like,
oh, next level.
You guys are super impressive. And I'm like, you're impressive.
Right.
You did a hospital and didn't cry. What?
You're
a, I'd be like.
But so, yeah, just to say that like the scope of deconstruction is like pretty vast. And we're in like a really nice little like market here. But like Katie's taking on like bigger and badder projects every day. And so like.
It is always growing.
I hope someday you can decon like a hospital or school. If you want to do that.
Yeah, thank you for that caveat.
If you're up for it.
Katie loves it when I send her leads that I find.
Poke my eye out. It's like, Kelly, don't answer the phone anymore. No, I'm totally kidding.
I'm thinking about some of the you know, people that come in and want to, and investors in this area that come in and that are buying a historic house or that are redoing something and upgrading and putting it back on the market and that sort of thing. I've seen so many people look at these historic houses and say, okay, first thing I know, I need to figure out all these windows in this house. I mean, if you need windows, guys have windows.
We got windows.
God. I think Kelly has like 600 windows right now.
Yeah.
That would love to go live in someone else's home. Oh, yeah. You got rid of some?
No, we do have them. And people are putting old windows back in their houses.
Yeah.
They are. Sometimes because they're being mandated to do so, but also otherwise because
they like, want
solid wood.
And they're cool looking.
Wavy glass.
Well, they are. And it's the window industry is the one lying to you, telling you that you have to put in new windows because, you know, all of your hot air is going to go out in the winter. Your cold air is going to be gone all summer.
Right.
I mean, but also that was a huge shift in like how people live because historically you lived a little cooler in the winter and warmer in the summer.
You'd open your windows.
Oh, what is that?
Who does that?
Yeah,
weird. Not air conditioned anymore.
But no, it's like that's one of my favorite parts is even the person who's coming in and has like brings a stick of floor and they're like, I just moved in and there's some rot and the house was made in 1927. Do you have a match? And I'm like, I sure do have a match.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can put in some flooring that comes from our house that was like maybe in your same neighborhood or, and it'll like work out great. And it's just, it's really satisfying that, and there's so many different types of floors, even just in Savannah.
Oh my gosh.
Very true.
Yeah.
But we seem to have like a sampling of all of them. And what's also really cool is Katie mentioned like people are taking things out of houses. You know, people have design and aesthetic decisions, and sometimes you need to do like structural repairs that necessitate the removal of things. But a lot of people will call us and say, hey, I have all this stuff. Do you want it?
Right.
And we're like, yeah. And sometimes it's stuff that we don't want, but like still
sometimes
there's a reuse culture here, which I think is like worth celebrating.
Well, I was going to say, sometimes when we take things that we normally, you know, are harder for us to move, but we do have the outlet. Like we know of the outlet. We take it. And I think sometimes it's a community service, you know, because why would we not share our knowledge? And I mean, there are retailers like Habitat for Humanity is one of our favorite local organizations that we work with, especially for hollow core doors that are still really great. Even appliances that people leave in the structure if they're in good shape or, you know, minimal wear and tear. Because Repurpose Savannah, we do focus largely in historic materials and like historic with my air quotes is anything 50 years and older, but we're getting closer to like the glue age of building. So I think we try and take decon jobs that are 70s and earlier earlier. But sometimes you get weird additions. We heavily outsource weird, like what we would consider weird reuse materials to Habitat, and we work very closely together to, you know, ensure more materials stay out of the landfill.
Another like great iteration of what we do here would be to have like another building reuse center. Most cities have more than one, right?
Oh yeah.
I mean, we do have Habitat, but
well, and Pitter Joe's is fantastic. But I mean, so Repurpose Savannah actually just got a pretty incredible grant from the National Park Service through the NCPTT.
Yep, you said it right.
Yep. It's a lot of letters.
It's the National Center for Preservation Technology and Training.
Ah, okay. I was going to ask what all the letters stand for.
I was waiting for Kelly to say it. But and a part of that grant is that we at Repurpose, we have five humans and five of us go out to different regions in the United States. So I just got back from the Pacific Northwest, which is where I was born and raised. So it's kind of fun. And my dad came on my trip with me.
Oh, fun.
But it was
why did you go on this trip?
To see my dad.
That the National Park Service paid for.
To have fun.
To eat good sushi. Woo-hoo. In Seattle. No, so I traveled to Seattle, in Seattle area, and then Portland to visit other reuse facilities and analyze like how they decide what they will and will not take, how they choose to process, you know, historic windows versus vinyl windows, historic doors versus modern doors, things like that caliber, so that we can aggregate our learnings, bring it back to Savannah, and then develop best practices for processing and reusing reclaimed materials.
Yeah, kind of like a how-to manuals for how to reuse doors
and
windows,
how to process them
lumber
for reuse.
Because it's not linear. And like, we've made a lot of stupid mistakes. Not stupid. Mistakes are good. You need to make them.
That's how you learn.
We've learned. Say that. We've learned.
That would facilitate the proliferation of
reuse.
Good reuse. Because you need to make it easy. It's already like not.
It's hard.
Common.
And it's hard to get people to.
We're trying to make it easier for
buy
people.
In.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the education piece that you're able to provide is bigger then, because then people can, again, use you as a trusted resource and say, this is what I'm about to do. How do I do it?
Right.
What does this even mean? What does this material look like if I take it out? Can it be used again?
Yeah.
How do we even process it? You know,
right. We're hoping that it can be used / seen in a similar way to preservation briefs that do already exist in preservation world.
We also rely on like a lot of partners that we have in town, right? So Katie works with a lot of different companies. I work with a lot of like carpenters and millwork companies. And if I don't have the answer for a client, I'm going to connect them with somebody that does.
Right.
Or like if they need, you know, they've got this vision and I have the material, but they need someone to help build them something, either our in-house shop will do it, or I mean, yeah, we're lucky. We have a city full of like super skilled craftspeople.
Yeah, it's really nice that Kelly is married to like one of our favorite local craftsworkers.
That's helpful. Yeah.
It's, I'm like, is it? Because then Kelly just works at home also. Like, you know, take a break.
Love.
So do you ever stop working is the question.
It's not work.
I think when she's sleeping.
Yeah.
It's not work.
When it's passion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's exactly right. Well, we want to tell everybody April 6th is a big day to support Moonlight on the Marsh. Big fundraising gala. Now, the dress attire for that.
Vintage and reused. I don't care what it is. Don't buy something
don't
new.
Don't buy something new.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's last year was really fun. I mean, people
it's
just
wild.
Look great.
Yeah, I mean, you get vintage sailor outfits to whatever Kelly wore to.
I wore a vintage French Soleado dress for anyone who knows.
Oh, wow.
Okay, well, you know what? I bought a
hand block printed from like, it was cool. But yeah. It's a great time. Yes. We do have some sponsorship opportunities. Mm-hmm. If folks are interested, that is all on our website.
It is a ticketed event. And so the best way to buy tickets is on Better World. Or our website is fantastic as well. And it'll take you to that company. But it's betterworldreuse.betterworld.org is the easiest way. But if you follow us on social media, Yolanda, our marketing director is brilliant, fantastic, and she makes it super easy, all live links. Just follow Repurpose Savannah.
Have you gotten a ticket, D?
I haven't yet.
Oh, but all right. We need to do that.
Call you out on
Yeah, we need to do that. And but I've already been trying to figure out what I'm going to wear. So I'm planning, you know, I've got it. I've got it going on my head.
Vintage.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Which is always really fun.
And it is fun.
I mean, we have old wood, so wear old clothes.
Right.
I don't know. Just kidding.
If I have old wood I can wear, I'll actually try to incorporate the wood into the outfit.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
there'll be a prize for that for sure.
Oh, nice. And of course, music and
an auction.
Yes.
There'll be items auctioned off.
Food is great. One of our board members, Cassandra Boswell, brilliant. Again, they all are, but makes her own wine.
Oh.
So she's like, she's doing the wine.
I love it.
And I can't wait.
I love that.
Again, I mean, I think a lot of what we do is also is partnering with people, also like women predominantly. And so any which way we can.
If you make your own wine, do you call it wine shine? What do you call it?
I don't know. I just call it Cassandra's wine.
Okay.
So as long as it appears, I will drink it.
It's fine.
Yeah. It's fine wine.
Tea. It's fine wine. I do want to mention this, something else folks can look at on the website, which is repurposesavannah.org, is the Emergent Studios. I think that's so cool. Yeah. If you want to talk about that for a second before we wrap up.
Sure. So, at our lumberyard, it's not just Repurpose Savannah. There are a few other companies that operate, out of our lumberyard. Mm-hmm. And again, they were companies that were kind of emerging in this field of supporting the preservation efforts of this wonderful city. So we have a historic window restoration company,
Henshaw Preservation,
who are booked out. I mean, and they do fantastic work, like a beautifully preserved window. Like there's nothing quite like
right?
it. It's like very, very satisfying. I mean, Derek Hopp. Is a metal worker,
DLH Metalworks,
who does forge work, and Ryan Hartig, Gold Standard, so woodworking, Ridley Stallings,
our local celeb,
right?
So yeah, these other craftspeople that are kind of working with us, around us, it's awesome, like Beehive.
Yeah. It's like an incubator.
I know.
Almost, I wish historical structure trades. Working
for sure
incubator because like Ridley is an artist and she uses reclaimed materials for all of her signs, which is fun and it's easy. She doesn't have to go very far to find materials. Ryan Hartig also constantly doing custom historic preservation, you know, effort jobs, things like that. And then Derek custom does a lot of iron work for historic properties. He just did one off of Whitaker on the park, so you can see his handiwork.
But that was, you know, the goal of that was to, you know, we were able to like operate out of an amazing facility. Mm-hmm. We didn't need to occupy all the space and like we're better for being surrounded by really skilled people.
Yeah. Right.
When it helps that, you know, Natalie and Matt with Henshaw Preservation, they don't, you know, we bring historic windows back. They exist.
Oh, yeah.
So like they're the best shoppers as far as windows
for
go.
Sure.
And when
Matt buys something like every week from us.
Oh, he's always cooking. But I mean, and if you didn't know, I know a lot of people don't, but you can see all of everybody's handiwork all over downtown Savannah and even into Southside and Wilmington and North Carolina and South Carolina and like Atlanta. We do projects in Atlanta too.
That's amazing. Yeah. And the reach is huge. And I love the fact that it's not, you guys are not just about like doing everything in-house. It's about the collaboration and folks that want to come in and be a part of it and sort of jump in to make it all bigger, because really like at the end of the day, the purpose of everything is bigger than just where we are right now.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, we're just try to be great stewards for the materials that we have now, but I mean, it's creating the culture that will become the stewards for the future.
We want to make ourselves like irrelevant or redundant, right? We want there to be so many deconstruction companies. Well, Katie will be running one. I'll be retired. but we want there to be, more people doing what we do.
I would love some competition in Savannah. You know, I mean, as far as deconstruction goes, but I mean, at the end of the day, like my super hardcore dream would be every historic structure is saved and maintained and loved. But, you know, and then I'll hang up my crowbar and call it a day. But until they do that, I'm myself and my crew are very well employed to make sure that we are diverting these fantastic materials from the landfills. Our landfills are full, you know, I mean, and Georgia and Texas are two of the states in the United States that it's the cheapest for tipping fees, which means for you to throw trash away in a landfill. So
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So remember that when you throw things away.
Right.
I mean, and you know, the number for what or how much tonnage of waste is putting in landfills, like there's no internal all 50 states number. Like I can't give you a national statistic because, you know, for instance, states in the Northeast that are very small, their landfills are full. So they send out their some of their waste. But then they're not recording the waste because they're not putting it in their landfills. But the other state that it's going to isn't recording it because it's not their waste.
It's a whole
so
thing.
So it's a limbo.
Right.
Where people aren't. Don't know how much we're throwing away.
Yeah. Katie doesn't know how much people are throwing
it
away.
It gets me
but
going.
People aren't really held accountable for their,
exactly.
their trash, mm-hmm. which
and
is
when
unfortunate.
It's cheap, it's easy. So, I mean, policy is huge by itself. So, you know, creating a deconstruction ordinance. You know, it has its benefits, which greatly outweigh the cons.
Do you guys have your hands in the policy working as well and folks that are trying to figure that out?
Yes, do. There is a deconstruction policy coalition that a lot of our people are have their hands in. And we have meetings. There's an Instagram page.
Oh,
Google it.
no, but it's a long process. And they've passed deconstruction ordinances in a few states.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
but we would love to be the first on the Eastern Seaboard to do it. And like, you know, that should incentivize someone out there that like we want to be the first.
Well, I mean, San Antonio just passed a deconstruction ordinance and they're what, the seventh largest city in the continental United States and in Texas. So, and I'm like, if Stephanie Phillips can do it in Texas, repurpose
she's
Savannah
pretty
can
magical
do it here.
But that basically there would be a law that, you know, buildings of a certain age would have to be considered for deconstruction prior to a demolition permit being.
Right. And the city of Savannah has, they've passed a few demo permits conditionally that they're deconstructed versus traditionally demolished. So, I mean, little moves like that we see are happening more and more, which is really fantastic. And I mean, Savannah by itself is such a leader in what historic preservation means. So I think this would be a fantastic jumping off point for the city.
Yeah. And I feel like unless people have it, sometimes unless you have it in front of you as a policy, you don't think about it and you're not going to go seek it out. But if it's there, I feel like that would move the needle quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, it would.
We like to talk about like a few statistics just to like they tend to stay with people. But construction and demolition are responsible for a third of our global CO2 emissions.
Wow.
And then the houses that Katie deconstructs. So the total waste in kind of like one, we'll call it like a 1600 square foot home, is equivalent to a human's average lifespan of waste. So
we
always like to say that we've deconstructed enough 22. Homes to like cover ourselves, right? So we're good. Like it's a wash.
Right.
I think like repurposed crew and the board are covered right now because that's how many.
But we'd love to cover more people.
Yeah.
So
of course.
Your lifetime of waste has been, you know,
has made some sort of sense. And
been zeroed out.
Yeah. Thanks. Like, that would be awesome. Who wants to go to the next level with a bill?
Right.
I mean, seriously. I would love that zeroed out. I need to figure out how I can talk to you guys more about that.
Right.
Absolutely. Pay my bill.
Well, and I think actually in 2023, Repurpose Savannah kept 475 tons of reclaimed materials out of the landfills.
Wow.
That's a personal proud stat right there.
Yeah. That's amazing. You guys have really had really big projects that I think some people would recognize right off if you want to talk about some of the big ones that you guys have worked on.
So I think one of the ones that most people would be most familiar with is the Lincoln Saloon. It was that building behind Abe's on Lincoln.
Right.
That we did, I think, almost 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But that one was an interesting project. Fantastic structure. Because that's my word of the night. Yeah,
to deconstruct it.
It was. But what was incredible was historically, like, we didn't really know what the original height and mass was, but we found an even older timber frame structure that had burned at some point. And so they came in and they just kind of like used that as the opportunity to put a full second story on it. So originally it was like 1.5 stories, and a half just means it's a pitched roof on top. So like it's not a full 8 foot, or historically a full whatever foot. But that one was incredible. We had no idea what the original floor plan was, but through deconstruction, we had discovered it. Yeah. It was interesting because it had just over time, it had been there idle for so long. Someone did go and steal the hardwood floors out of it.
Oh,
so
wow,
it was
really?
Just joists on the inside. So it was like just the shell, just the first story or the first floor.
Yeah.
The second floor was still intact. But that, I mean, it yeah. was so out of like, I mean, in comparison to what modern code is, it's always fun to see how they used to build. I mean, the joists in the second floor ceiling were 42 on center. It was wild. There were like maybe 8 in the entire building, and it was a huge structure. So that was wild. It was also incredibly hot, in case anyone wanted to know.
We deconstructed that in the middle of the summer.
In the middle of the summer, oh, surrounded no. by only brick walls and asphalt. And I'm sorry to everybody who stayed in that hotel, because 7 o'clock, my Jenny was running.
Mm. Yeah. But it was a mid 19th century building, oldest mm-hmm. building we had ever touched.
Yep. It was a contributing structure, which was, I mean, incredibly rare. And like, I don't want to say honored, but like, that's probably
no, it was a really big privilege that we were able to do that.
It was. And not and have it was thrown
it
away.
It was sad. It was like a point of contention in the city of Savannah. A lot of people wanted to save it.
Right.
It was.
But, you know, I mean, and unfortunately, it comes down to like, well, do you want to see it demolished or this? And so I've been compared to the lesser of two evils. And I'm like, I don't think my mom would agree with that. But here we are. I was like, she likes me. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, it is like, do you want to see it demolished, or would you rather it like be 3D scanned, you know, meticulously have that house history? I mean, we partner with Ethos Preservation, another all-woman crew, and they do the entire house history of every project. So, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we're not just throwing it away or like deconstructing it and giving it to Kelly to sell without any provenance or any story behind it. I mean, every single piece of wood that we deconstruct gets labeled with that project's tag. So, for instance, Lincoln Saloon, it was LS. And every single piece of wood is measured and labeled with LS. So when you buy it, you know exactly where it came from.
Wow.
And it's linked to your receipt.
Which, yes, I mean, it's really cool, because I feel like, you know, over the years, we've learned we have to record people's stories, right? Mm-hmm. And now we do that digitally, and we do that on podcasts, and we do that on things that will live forever and have it in people's voice. It's the same thing with a building and a house. Mm-hmm. Like, to be able to have the story, have it documented, have some record of saying, this is what it looked like,
right.
and this is what the story was behind it. It's super important.
I firmly believe that deconstruction continues that story.
Right? Yeah.
Because now all the pieces of the Lincoln Saloon are out there, and
they're
in homes where people know those stories and will tell those stories.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We deconstruct buildings, but we also accept urban lumber. So we do too many things, but when, there are amazing buildings in Savannah. There are also amazing trees in Savannah.
Yeah.
Tell them about the magnolia from Forsyth.
So Katie saw one of those green tickets, right? On a tree in Forsyth. And it was like a magnolia with a diameter of like over 2 feet the city of Savannah brought to us. So we mill the trees. We turn it into usable lumber. We were also given some of the Macaulay oak, which was a famous and well-loved tree in the Baldwin Park area.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we built a crazy bar top. It was like 32 feet. It was a wild project.
But, you know, it's people have connections with the buildings that we take apart. Katie and the crew deconstructed a house on Tybee on Van Horn that I can't tell you how many people would come by the lumberyard. We even like people would find us on the internet and be like, can you send me a few just sticks of the house? Like, I love that house. I want to make a picture frame out of it. Yeah. I just want part of it.
The tangibility of, you know, the story sticking with the wood goes a long way.
Yeah, it's really sweet.
I mean, because the Tybee House, we call it Bill's Beach House. The gentleman who owned it, his name was Bill, and he was incredibly sweet. He and his wife. And they put a lot of faith in us in that project, you know, because he had owned it for so long, and it was really a it meant a lot to them, not just to have it be deconstructed and not just like crushed and dumped in a very violent manner.
Right.
I mean, I think we created a friendship for life through that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure, because their story will live on, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, yeah. How cool is that?
But I mean, also our clients sometimes, I mean, they become our biggest advocates.
Sure.
For what deconstruction has to offer.
Yeah.
One of my favorite projects was one out on Isle of Hope, and we did the streetcars. It was this 1930s structure. This cute couple got married in the 30s, and they moved out to Isle of Hope, and they had these two streetcars just placed on the property. It makes no sense.
Well, like, there used to be streetcars down there.
Right.
Right. But it was just cute that they set them right next to one another, looking over the, I don't remember what creek that is. Anyway, but they put it right on the marsh, and then they built like a little hyphen. So when you walked in, one streetcar had been converted into the kitchen.
Oh, wow.
And then there was a little hyphen area that became the living room. And the second streetcar was the bedroom and the bathroom. And so we went in and just like meticulously deconstructed the additional, you know, the addition structure, leaving them totally naked and ready to be craned out of their location. And they're going to be restored.
Wow.
At the Railroad
Museum.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Museum.
That is so cool.
Yeah. And it was with the Isle of Hope Historical Society.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
It was wild.
It's not every day that you're like, you're going to deconstruct a house and there are two trains inside.
Right.
Like, then we're going to bring in a crane. And I was like, what? So that one was a really fun project. I'm trying to think. We deconstructed one down on Bull Street, the old furniture store that sat for like 20 years on the west side of Bull, and I think 46, also known as Pearl Street. That one was three structures that had been converted, you know, through many holes and openings into one structure. And that one was a beast.
Yeah. A lot of these histories and stories are on our website, but
mm-hmm. the repurposed neighborhood.
Yeah. It's super cool that in unbuilding, you learn a lot. You find a lot of like secrets and histories and it's awesome.
Yeah.
I want Katie's job.
Right.
I want Katie's job too.
Well, okay, we all want Katie's job. All right,
it's, you know, it's surprising. Cool.
Like, I won't tell you the paperwork
from the outside. You're like, ugh, you know, like we are taking apart houses that have been like neglected for sometimes decades.
Right,
they're not. It's not super pleasant.
Yeah,
but you strip away some of the bad looking and smelling stuff, and there's like gold underneath.
Yeah,
right. And I don't mean to sound like a greedy leprechaun, but
it's like a treasure hunt.
The season,
yeah.
It's like uncovering, you're right, uncovering all these like things underneath that weren't neglected under the stuff that was. All right. Well, we want to make sure everybody joins all of us April 6th, Moonlight on the Marsh fundraising. It's going to be a big night. And repurposesavannah.org if you want to find out more about what's going on. Well, true badasses in Savannah. Thank you guys for taking some time, telling your stories, and thank you for what you do here. It's a big deal and it means a lot. And,
thanks.
And we're better for it.
Oh, thanks, Aww, Dee.
Thanks,
Can
Dee.
You write that down so I can send it to my parents?
No worries. I have it recorded. We'll just send it to them.
Great.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Who's looking for a fun night out? I'm always raising my hand for that. It's about that time of year when we'll have some family coming into town. And of course, you want to entertain them with something new and totally fun. Well, we have just the thing. Savannah's best live music and theater experience. It's Savannah Cabaret. And you're in luck. Tickets are now on sale for the production of Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein at savannahcabaret.com. Tickets are on sale, savannahcabaret.com. This production is going to be everything. But you need to reserve your tickets because they will sell fast. I promise you that. The show runs April 18th through May 5th. Go ahead and get your tickets now before they sell out. Based on the classic 1974 movie, it's the hilarious show that tells the story of Dr. Frankenstein's grandson, Frederick, who is struggling to create his own legacy separate from his family's name. It's going to be a monstrous good time on Jefferson Street in historic Savannah. A fabulous cast and a laugh out loud great time, but only if you have tickets. SavannahCabaret.com. And later this year, we've got time traveling drag queens in the 1960s, maybe a little case of the cabaret killer. Doesn't that sound fun? Go get your tickets at SavannahCabaret.com. That's SavannahCabaret.com. You know, some people have a dream home. Some people have 10 dreams about buying property in 10 different places. At Cork and Austin Hill Realty, we always want you to live who you are, wherever and whatever that dream looks like. You hear businesses talking sometimes about how long they have served a city, but do you ever stop and wonder if they mean that's how long they've been in business there? Or do they really mean that's how long they've served that community? Corcoran Austin Hill Realty truly serves Savannah. Yes, I mean the region, but I really mean the people, the history, the business developers, the nonprofits, all communities, all backgrounds, the buyers, the sellers, the investors, the mom and pop shop owners, the first-time home seekers, the young, the matured, and we've been doing it, serving you, since 1978. Corcoran Austin Hill Realty sits beautifully at the corner of Liberty and Bull Streets in historic Savannah, home of the Made of Savannah podcast studios, and home to a huge group of people ready to serve you. 251 Bull Street, Savannah. Stop in, ask questions, see local artists at Location Gallery, and check out available listings at CorcoranAHR.com. Thanks for listening to the Made of Savannah podcast. Do us a favor, write us a review, give us a rating. Make sure you subscribe or follow the podcast and share this podcast with someone you know. Follow us on Instagram at Made of Savannah. And a huge thanks to our sponsors, Savoy Society, Colleagues and Lovers, and the fabulous Savannah Cabaret. If you or someone you know has a great Savannah story to tell, be sure to get in touch with us. We would love to hear it. The welcome mat is always out.